Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehas ben Levi Vidason Vaviram b'nei Eliyav Ve'on ben Peles b'nei Reuven. And Korach, son of Yitzhar, son of Kahat, son of Levi, separated himself with Datan and Aviram, sons of Eliyav, and On, son of Pelet, the offspring of Reuven.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Korach. We also bench Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. I'll mention that in a moment. Recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 21st of Sivan 5774, corresponding to June 19th. This has not been a happy week in Israel or throughout the Jewish world, I suspect, because of the kidnapping last Thursday night of three boys and the news sort of has been no news, variations of the theme. We're all praying and hoping and signing petitions and watching very carefully what the government does and says and what the security forces do and say. And what I would like to do here is not just Psalm 130 as I would usually do, but 130 and 121, which are both calls to God for help, and then follow it with a Misha Berach, which can be found in the Koren Siddur, with the addition of the names of the boys. This is a Misha Berach that was composed for captive and missing Israeli soldiers and civilians and Jews anywhere in the world in trouble. Definitely Jonathan Pollard is included in the intention of this particular Misha Berach, and in this particular week so are the three kidnapped boys, Gilad, Naftali, and Ayal. So we'll do that now, Psalm 130, then 121, and then the Misha Berach. Just want to point out one thing about the Misha Berach now, so we don't lose the flow of the reading, and that is that usually the various Misha Berachs that we have include, may he who blessed or blesses our patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moshe, Aharon, David, and Shlomo. Those are very often the seven that are mentioned. And in this particular Misha Berach, they add an eighth, Yosef, because Yosef was kidnapped, was captive, and was missing. And therefore it's appropriate to include him in our prayer to God for the safe and happy return of the boys. I suppose I should also say that Misha Berachs are generally said in a synagogue shul situation, in a group, at least of a minyan, so I'm taking the liberty of including the radio listenership of TT Audio as part of the tzibur that is hearing this tefillah, and I hope that there is no breach of halacha even if it's not commonly done by individuals. I'm also going to take the liberty of adding the matriarchs as well, since the mothers of the kidnapped boys have been very outspoken and in the forefront of this week's news reporting. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avono tishmorya Adonai miya amod. Ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbeimo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Shir lama alot esa enai el heharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai osei shamayim v'oretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yeminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra, yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'ad olam. Mishaberach avoteinu Avraham Yitzhak v'Yaakov, Yosef Moshe v'Aharon, David u'Shlomo, imoteinu, Sora, Rivka, Rachel v'Lea, ויברך וישמור וינצור את נדרי צבא הגנה לישראל ושפויו ואת כל אחינו הנתונים בצרה ובשביה ובכללם גלעד מיכאל בן בת גלים יעקב נפתלי בן רחל דבורה אייל בן איריס תשורה בעבור שכל הקהל הקדוש הזה מתפלל בעבורם HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yimalei Rachamim Aleihem V'yotziyem Mechoshech V'tzalmovet U'mosroteihem Yenateik U'mimetsukoteihem Yoshiyem V'yishivem Mehera Lecheik Mishpachoteihem Yodu L'Adonai Chasto V'nifla'otav Livnei Adam V'kuyam Bahem Mikra Shekatuv U'fduye Adonai Yeshuvun U'vo'u Tzion Birina V'simchat Olam Al Rosham Sason v'simcha yasigu v'nasu yagon v'anacha v'nomar amen. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela l'ora u'mishibud l'gu'ula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. For those who are not fluent or experienced in the Hebrew, I want to read the words of the Mishaberach. May he who blessed our ancestors, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Yosef, Moshe, and Aharon, David, and Shlomo, Solomon, and I added our mothers, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valea, may he bless, protect, and guard the members of the Israel Defense Forces missing in action or held captive, and other captives among our brethren, the whole house of Israel, who are in distress or captivity, and among them, mentioning the names of Gilad, Naphtali, and Ayal, as we, the members of this holy congregation, pray on their behalf. May the Holy One, blessed be He, have compassion on them and bring them out from darkness and the shadow of death. May He break their bonds, deliver them from their distress, and bring them swiftly back to their families' embrace. Give thanks to God for His loving kindness and for the wonders He does for the children of men. And may there be fulfilled in them the verse. It's a verse from Isaiah chapter 35. Those redeemed by God will return. They will enter Zion with singing, and everlasting joy will crown their heads. gladness and joy will overtake them, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. And let us answer, Amen. The way it works in Israel, and I'm sure in other Jewish communities around the world, but there's something especially about it here, that when something like this happens, there are people who are part of the families, know the families, live in the same cities as the people, as the boys who were kidnapped, know someone who knows someone. And then it goes beyond that to everyone immediately can't avoid it, thinking of their own situations. And the words, mostly unspoken, of there but for the grace of God go I. I personally have a 14-year-old grandson who I have taken from Yerushalayim to the Trempiada in Gilo. Trempiada is a hitchhiking station where we either waited for a bus to Kiryat Arba or arranged for a ride. And then you have to look into each car and decide, do you know the people? Do you want to know the people? Is it safe to go? And then when he gets to Kiryat Arba, he sometimes has to wait at the bus station there, which is also a Trempiada, and either get picked up or get a ride to Otniel. So three boys are kidnapped, age 16, 16, 19. Ages are not relevant here, because here's a 14-year-old, and it's my own grandson, who sometimes waits without knowing anybody who's waiting and does not always have me or someone else to wait with him. And it's something that we all are part of. This kidnapping is a very personal thing to everybody here in Israel. So I apologize for belaboring the point. I'm going to finish up this segment by playing a version of Achenu, and then we'll get settled down into Parshat Korach and wherever else the show takes us.
Achenu kol beis Yisrael Hanesunim batorah uvashivyon Aimdim bein bayam uvein bayabasha Achenu kol beis Yisrael Hanesunim batzara uvashivya
I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we bench Rosh Chodesh this Shabbat. Rosh Chodesh is not till the following Shabbat, so it's about as far as you can get. Still, the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh, we have the custom of announcing and blessing the month. And this time, the three kidnapped boys are in our minds as we ask for a blessing for all of us, all of ourselves, and all of Israel. So this Shabbat, Parshat Korach, we will announce that Rosh Chodesh Tammuz will be Yom Shabbat Kodesh, the coming Shabbat, Ulamachrato, and the day following it, Yom Rishon. The only situation when you're really supposed to say Ulamachrato and the day following, because it's always the day following, is in the case of Saturday and Sunday, because you've got a Sunday, which, when we say this on Shabbat, would be tomorrow. And you don't mean that Sunday. You mean Shabbat coming and the day following it, a Sunday. So that's the way it works. And next week we'll talk more about the month of Tammuz. Before we get into Korach, I want to share a lingering thought that I had. Maybe it's a new novel idea. On from Parshat Shlach, specifically from the Meraglim. Last week I spoke about the famous statement of the Ari Zal, who said that the mitzvah of Bikurim, first fruits, is an atonement and a tikkun, a spiritual repair for Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies. I have a new angle to that I would like to add. The Mitzvah Bikurim, I spoke about plenty last week, is basically bringing a fruit and making a declaration, as the Meraglim had brought fruit and made their statement, and the statement of the Bikurim bringer is so much in contrast and contradistinction to the statement of the Meraglim that it's an effective concept of the Ari, that the Mitzvah of Bikurim is a tikkun for Chet HaMeraglim. But I began to think in terms of the fact that Bikurim is brought only in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, only by a person who owns fields of wheat or barley or vineyards or orchards of the other fruits from among the seven species, and only once a year, which means not everybody does it, and we don't do it now, and we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, and Amir Tashem we will, and we'll be zoche to the mitzvah Bikurim completely, and it will continue to serve as a tikkun to Chet HaMeraglim. But I want to imaginarily draw a chart where at the top of the page, on the right-hand side is the mitzvah Bikurim, on the left-hand side is Chet HaMeraglim. Now below Chet HaMeraglim, all the way down the rest of the page, is the other aspect of the sin of the spies, namely the adult male population who panicked at the words of the spies, who said, let's choose a new leader and go back to Egypt. The punishments were different. The spies themselves were struck dead on the spot. And the adult male population, except for Kalev and Yehoshua, were decreed to die out in the course of continued wandering for a total of 40 years. And it sort of breaks up or let's say extends the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies, to the top of that left-hand side of the page, the spies themselves, and the rest of the people. Corresponding to the spies themselves, we have the glorious mitzvah of Bikurim, Beit HaMikdash, farmer with fields and with joy in his heart for the ability to fulfill the mitzvah of Bikurim and praise God for being brought to Eretz Yisrael and the Torah commanding V'samachta b'chol hatov, rejoice in all the good. So there's something missing still, and that is the extension below the right-hand side of the page from Bikurim down, corresponding to the Hamon Am, the whole multitude. And I realize that that can be summed up in the form of something which we don't need a Beit HaMikdash for, which we don't need to own fields for, and which is said all the time. A day, every day, couple of times a day, different times. Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Korach and the rest of this thought. And you'll see at the end of this thought the little time travel switch that we have in store. Very often, by the way, I do get emails from listeners who will identify correctly or not correctly an opening theme and an opening of the second half. This week, I don't know if I'm going to tell you what it is, see if anyone could figure it out, but I have totally different things, but they all focus on the same. I'll leave that as the only hint. What you have now coming up is the 3 minutes and 15 seconds that I went over the first show, then went back and mentioned that I would finish it, left it as a cliffhanger, so to speak, and we'll finish the piece now. If you remember, the last thing that I was speaking about is our mundane, everyday or almost everyday and sometimes more than once a day version of the bringing of Bikurim in a different way, as I will explain, actually as I have already explained, but you're not hearing it until now. So, the future, the past, maybe this is something that we could help understand Ein Seder Mukdam Umuchar Batorah, that there are things that happen, and then when you put things together in some way to present it to others, Lahavdil, not Lahavdil, but on the Torah level is one thing, and in a radio show it's a very different thing. But when you can move pieces around and let your audience hear something that was recorded later and they're hearing it earlier, and there's a purpose to it, whatever. It just gave me that thought, but here is the rest of where I just left off before. And I'm referring to Birkat HaMazon, but let's focus specifically on the Bracha Me'ein Shalosh, which is the bracha that is said after eating food that is made, pastries and pasta made with the grains, and wine from grapes, and the fruits themselves of olives and dates and grapes and figs and pomegranates. A person takes from those fruits, just like the Bikurim bringer did, but he does not put them in a basket and bring them to the Beit HaMikdash. He eats them, and he enjoys them, but he elevates them to a spiritual dimension, in addition to the physical dimension, not by putting them in a basket and putting them on the side of the Mizbeach and giving them to a Kohen, but by sanctifying them, by following the proper halachot, including the making of brachot, and specifically the bracha acharona, the after bracha. Because the after bracha for that says, Blessed are you, God, al hamichya v'al hakalkala, for the sustenance that we have, v'al tenuvat hasadeh, the bounty of the field, v'al eretz chemda tova urechava, shehinchil avotenu, and to this wonderful land which you have given as an inheritance and heritage to our ancestors and to us through the generations. And therefore we are echoing the sentiment expressed in the statement of the Bikurim bringer, but it's in the everyday. You had some cookies, you make a bracha achrona. You drank wine, you make a bracha achrona. You had raisins or grapes or figs or dates or olives, you make a bracha achrona. And that bracha achrona, therefore, in my new way of looking at things, is also a tikkun, a repair, and an atonement for not the gross sin of the spies who said terrible things about living in Israel, but to all the other people at the time who panicked and said, yeah, what are we going to do? Let's go back to Egypt. That's my point. I've gone way over the first part of the show, so what I'm going to do, which you'll find out, and it's a little like time travel here, because I'm going to do it now, but then when I finish the first half of the show, it will be recorded after what I'm saying now, but you will hear it before what I say now. But I'm going to leave it in. Got that? If not, listen. Okay, we're back to real time now. And let's continue with the second half of Torah Tidbits audio. Parshat Korach. There's something very upsetting as we approach Parshat Korach, because the sin of the spies from last week's Torah reading, God says to Moshe, separate from these people and I'll destroy them all. Because this is the 10th time that they have irked me, for lack of a better translation. Now that means that we go back and we start about, I guess, Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. And the complaining, actually earlier than that, for water, the bitter complaining, pun intended, bitter water, that was made drinkable by Moshe Rabbeinu at God's command, tossing a special kind of wood into the water, and it made it sweet and drinkable. But the complaining was uncalled for. You could be thirsty, and you could demand water to drink, but you can't be nasty about it, and you can't say, what did God take us out of Egypt to bury us here in the Midbar? Weren't there enough graves in Egypt? And all of those kind of things. So we really, really bothered and bugged God, because there was the biggie thing of the sin of the golden calf. There was the biggie thing, which was a culmination of sorts, in the sin of the spies. And in between, you had various and sundry kvetchings. And when the Torah is finished with the sin of the spies, you would think, okay, it's going to be smooth sailing for the next generation here on in. And then we come to Vayikach Korach. Korach takes, and by the way, in the translation, which is from the Art Scroll Stone Edition Chumash, that I gave at the beginning of the show for Vayikach Korach, that he separated himself to the side. And that's based on one of the interpretations of Vayikach Korach, that Vayikach means he took himself off to the side, or he separated himself. But there are other meanings of Vayikach Korach, that he took by persuasion the people who joined in his rebellion. None of that is germane to the point, and the point is that we just finished this devastating issue of the sin of the spies, and here we go again. So I don't even know a timetable on this for you, but it's disturbing enough that Korach should challenge Moshe's authority the way he did. Korach, by the way, was a first cousin of Moshe. His father was the second son of Kehat, the first one being Amram. Now, there are explanations that are given as to what was bothering Korach. Korach was a Levi, and Korach felt slighted when Aharon, Moshe's brother, was given the Kohen Godol ship, the high priesthood, and I hate that translation. And he said, my father's brother Amram has the leader, Moshe, the Kohen Godol, Aharon. What am I, chopped liver? More, the head of the Kehat family group from Levi went to the son of a younger brother of Korach's father. So he felt passed over for honors and position at least twice, and he challenged Moshe's authority. But he wasn't challenging just Moshe. If Moshe would have appointed his brother Kohen Godol, that would be bad enough. But it was God who commanded that Aharon was to be the Kohen Godol, and it was God who designated Eltzafon ben Uziel to be the tribal or the family leader of the Kehat branch of Levi. And Korach was sour grapes about the whole thing. And Korach found a good ear among the descendants of Reuven, chief among them in wickedness, Datan and Aviram, who had a whole history with Moshe already. And Reuven, the person, was passed over for various honors three times, where he was the firstborn of Israel. The Torah always refers to him as the firstborn of Israel. And yet, the double portion of the firstborn went to Yosef, Mother Rachel's firstborn. The kingship, the future kingship, went to Yehuda, fourth son of Leah, younger brother to Reuven. And the sacred spiritual element of the service in the Mishkan went to the family of Levi, the third child of Leah, and a younger brother than Reuven. So I could imagine Korach's pitch when he went into the various conclaves among the Reubenites, and he found ready, ripe and ready, people for his rebellion. One of them, On ben Pelet, backed out. We are told it was at the prodding of his wife, and she's given credit for saving his life, even though she had her own motives. And this became the Korach rebellion. But following last week's Sedra of Cheta Hamaraglim, it's somehow extra poignant and extra annoying and extra upsetting. Now, we need to add, just to give a better picture here, that Korach, being a Levi, had some kind of claim. Justified, no, but even unjustified, he had some connection to the family that was being given these honors. The Datan and Aviram said, we can't gain anything from this, but it's another fight against God and Moshe, and we're all for that. And they arrogantly refused when Moshe called them to appear, and they gave the ultimate affront to Eretz Yisrael, which is a continuation of the Cheto Hamaraglim kind of thing, when they arrogantly said to Moshe, it's bad enough that you didn't take us to the promised land, but why'd you take us even out of a land flowing in milk and honey, the land of Egypt? Now, Eretz Zavat Chalavu Devash is a description of Eretz Yisrael, very famous, very well known. I think it's something like 14 times in Tanakh the land is called a land flowing with milk and honey. And the words spoken by Datan and Aviram referring to Egypt as a land flowing with milk and honey was purposely meant to insult the land of Israel, to insult God, to insult Moshe, and they are taken to task for it. So it's not an easy kind of thing. Now, the bulk of Parshat Korach is about Korach's rebellion and the aftermath. And we see in Parshat Korach a phenomenon similar to last week as far as mitzvot, where there is a major portion of text with a story, followed by a series of mitzvot, which cannot be missed to be connected to the story, even though the Torah doesn't announce it as such. In other words, I spoke about this last week, in other words, in Parshat Bo, when the Torah is telling us about the night of the Exodus and the bringing of the Korban Pesach that night, it mixes in to the story itself various mitzvot in perpetuity, like the eating of Korban Pesach, and like the eating of matzah, and the not eating of chametz, and the reciting of the Haggadah. But those are mitzvot that are actually found within the story. So the connection is more than obvious. In Shlach and in Korach, we have mitzvot that follow the story. Officially, they're not related to the story, but of course they're related to the story. How can you miss the point? And Korach is a very strong example of that, because you've got 9 mitzvot, all of which stem from clarifying, or are involved in clarifying, the function of the Kohen, the function of the Levi, the obligations that the rest of us non-Kohen, non-Levi have to the Levi and to the Kohen, and the obligations that the Levi has to the Kohen, and the duties of the Levi in the Mikdash, and the fact that even though a Levi cannot usurp that which the Kohen does, a Kohen can't take over what a Levi does either. So all of these mitzvot are obviously following the terrible events of the Korach rebellion, but I want to make it clear that these are mitzvot that didn't just pop into God's head to command us as a result of Korach's rebellion. It's where he chose to place them in the Torah, but they are all part of the Sinai revelation and Moshe's 40 days and 40 nights that followed Sinai revelation to receive the entire Torah. Just to mention one of the mitzvot that we do find in Parshat Korach, it's the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, redemption of the firstborn human. And even though we've been introduced to the mitzvah earlier in the Parsha of Bamidbar, this is its place when they're talking about some of the gifts to the Kohen, one of which is the proceeds of redemption of the firstborn. I think I mentioned in a past show, but recently, that I was at a Pidyon HaBen of a niblet of mine, and Rabbi Nachman Kahana was the Kohen, and he had a very nice point. Part of the ceremony of Pidyon HaBen is for the Kohen to ask the father which he prefers, his firstborn son, or the 5 silver coins which he will be redeeming him with. Now, even though a lot of people joke about it and they say, wait, let me think it over, not only do all fathers say, I want my firstborn son, but they're obligated to say that. If a father refuses to do it and it doesn't get done, then once the child reaches the age of mitzvot, he is obligated to see to his redemption on his own. The answer is he doesn't really offer the choice, but, now I don't know if this is the reason, but it's a beautiful point. He said, you're saying to a new father, remember this is his firstborn, that you are now no longer just an individual and not even just a couple, but you now have a family. You have a child. Where are your priorities? Are your priorities with your children, your family, or with money? Elaborate that any way you want. That is one of the things you can say about offering that choice to the father of the newborn. We'll finish the show now with another version of Achinu, this one by Shweki. The first one, I think, was by Shlomo Daskal. And let me wish you now a Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Mevorchim Tov, and the happiest and most successful outcome of the situation here in Israel with the 3 kidnapped boys, Lehishtamea.
Achinu kol